You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Wins Above Fantasy, episode 73. Steve, it's September 15th, man. We are midway through the final month of the regular season, and we are keeping the reflection themes going. But we'll talk about a couple players to add if you guys are still in the hunt. And beyond that, take a fun look at five different shows we did throughout the season. We'll kind of do the accountability episode here, where we talk about the calls that we got right, some ones that we missed on, maybe spend a little bit less time on the misses, and then we'll talk about just the topic in general, where we might have learned a lesson or two. Should be a ton of fun. Thank you guys for joining us, especially this late in the season. We love having you here. You guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsBovePod. I am at Van_verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. Steve, how's life going, man? How did actually don't answer how week one of fantasy football went for you. We'll keep any of that off of the show. But how's dadhood and how's it going in general?
Good, crazy. Still not getting much sleep. She's good though. You know, no complaints on that end. It's not the same watching baseball without my home team in it, but I'm in the playoffs in a few other leagues, going for the overall title in Adams on the Wire listener league, which is exciting. I've been jumping back and forth between first and second in the overall, so it would be cool to take down say I won an overall in an FBC league. That'd be pretty cool, even though it's a smaller one sort of within the Pitcherless Podcast Network. But hey, that's where we are. So still out there grinding in a few leagues, which is nice. I do have one problem in that league, though. I am out of fab. In the On the Wire league, I am out of fab, as ironic as that is. In the show that talks about how to spend your waiver wire money, that league, I am out of fab. I dropped all of my fab on Dustin May when he came up in like the end of August. So I got DeGrom back, though, so that's been a nice boost there. But yeah, it's a grind. I actually, right before we were recording this, I was talking to my wife, and she is literally the person on this earth that probably cares the least about fantasy baseball. I would find it hard to find anyone that cares less about fantasy baseball than her. And she's like, what are you guys even going to talk about? Like, it's September. You're talking about next year already? I'm like, no, but we'll start doing that soon. But we're actually going to like look back at the advice we gave and see if it was wrong or right. Well, I don't know why I was so negative and went the wrong there. But whatever. We look back on that advice, and her face like lit up like, oh, wow, that's a good idea. So for someone as far out of touch with fantasy baseball as she is to be intrigued by the idea, that's how you know we got a good show topic. So
yeah,
my wife approves.
Very nice. Yeah, it's it's good content, we hope. And it kind of originated, to pull the curtain back a little bit, my brother, who I've been playing fantasy baseball with for 21 years, he's a loyal listener to Wins Above Fantasy, and he kind of mentioned early on that he appreciated where we kind of fell on the sword on a couple things. And he was like, that's something you don't hear that often around the industry, is like what your misses were. You know, of course, everybody kind of takes the victory laps and we joke about it. But in general, that's what we did last year. We want to do it this year. And eventually we'll get to our chalkboard picks, which is really our primary vehicle where we predict the four players that will kind of ascend above their ADP and the ones that will fade. But for that, some of those are based on kind of through the full season. So we'll hit on that, maybe not an entire episode, but just a section of an episode in the coming weeks. And then, yeah, we should have between the Mets and the Cardinals, Steve, some fun playoff baseball. So maybe can at least do some
Yankees too.
Oh, yeah.
Yankees too,
do,
for sure. Yeah.
Do some brackets and just kind of, maybe have some little mini games.
Some real baseball stuff. Yeah, I like it. Maybe do something fantasy wise for the playoffs. I like it. But yeah, like you said, like there's still time. Like look at what Bo Bichette's done over these last 2 weeks.
Yes.
Like there's still time to change your overall picture. Like I think I saw a tweet on Monday morning. We're recording this on Wednesday, and Bichette's obviously been good in the last two games since then. But I think coming into September, his WRC plus was 104, which is fine, but was very disappointing for where he was going in the overall first rounder. And now it's up to like 130, or it was like 128 at the beginning of the week. So much more in line with what you expected for Bo Bichette. So you can still swing an overall line, right? Like that season's going to look a lot less disappointing for Bichette after those last 2 weeks.
Yeah, seven homers.
Wild to say.
Seven homers in the past 2 weeks gets him up to 24.
Hitting like 500, yeah.
Yeah, gets him up to 24 homers on the season, 282 average, nine steals. That's
where did it? What happened with the steals though with Bichette? That's what's strange with me and him. Like, he's like 9 for 15, right? And after being 30 for 31 or something last year, that's the strangest part of the line for me.
Yeah, and that's gonna. I mean, obviously that was inflating any first round, second round guy if you were counting on them for like 20 bags. So it's gonna be so much fun to look ahead once we do. I think we're trying to be disciplined here and not going straight to like, oh, where would they go in drafts next season just yet. But Bichette will be one of the fun ones to kind of assess, like, especially with this late finish, like, is it fourth round? Is it higher? Is it lower? But that's a topic for another day. Steve, speaking of accountability, we do have to keep our promise to start the show off with some actionable advice. So without further ado, I believe we each have a player to add that we'll hit on, and then we will get into the bulk of the show, which is looking back on our episodes and going through the hits and the misses. So I will pass it off to you for your player to add this week.
Real quick, I know we promised not to get into to the look back and analysis for next year, but it's just strange. Bichette's sprint speed this year is in the 50th percentile, and it's been in the 70th to 80th percentile like the last 3 years. So I wonder if there was like some sort of injury there that was just holding him back.
Doesn't smell right.
Maybe that also led to some production, and he's finally healthy. Although he hasn't been running this month, but
interesting.
Whatever. Sorry. I had to look it up. I had to go
just,
to the spot
just
page.
When you thought you were out. They pull you back in.
I could not help myself. I had to do it. But yes, accountability and add, and I think I have a good one. It's Spencer Torkelson, 16% rostered in Yahoo. And since he's come up, the surface numbers haven't been great. He was recalled on September 1st. When rosters expanded, and there was, you know, we talked about it, I think, when we had that roster expansion episode, and it was concerning that he was striking out more at AAA and, you know, was essentially a league average hitter. I think he had 100 WRC plus in his stint since he was sent back down in like June or July after he struggled this year. But there's a lot of encouraging things going on under the hood. To find an ad quickly before the show, I just sorted from September 1st to now and looked at some StatCast data. And since then, Spencer Torkelson has a 97 average exit velocity. For some context, on the year, his average exit velocity was 90.5. So, yes, it's a smaller sample. It's just 28 batted balls events, but, you know, that big of a difference is definitely noteworthy. He's got a 17.9% barrel rate with five barrels. Before that, you know, he had just 13 barrels in the 3 months. So way outpacing where his barrel rate was for the year. It's up to 8.3, which is actually going to look pretty good. But, you know, it goes to show that it was not that good before he came back up. So there's a lot going on that looks really good. And then what's even more encouraging is the fact that his chase rate is way down. Right before he got sent down on July 9th, his rolling 10-game O-swing, so this chase rate was at 41.8%, so really, really bad. Now that since he's back in game 93 that he's played this year, his rolling 10-game O-swing is 26%. So he cut, you know, 14 percentage points off of that O-swing, which is really encouraging, right? Because that's what you want from a guy that has this raw hit tool and power that Torkelson has, and why he went one overall. You want him just waiting for those mistake pitches and mashing. And, you know, you can see it. The K rate is way down. It's a 15% over the last 10 games for him. Right before he got sent down, it was at like 32%. So there's a lot going on that looks really good. He's hitting the ball harder, and it looks like his plate skills are, you know, taking a step. It looks like he's figured something out at the major league level, and it's a nice add because there really hasn't been many surface stats. You know, it's not like he has like four home runs. I think he only has one home run and two RBIs, but he's hitting, you know, 286. But I think there's going to be some more to come, and he could go on a nice little hot streak here to end the season. So I would grab Torkelson in any league that he's available for the stretch run here.
Yeah, that's a great one, and it's a perfect one for, you know, another episode topic we were talking about doing, which is basically September's to remember, kind of focusing on the mini breakouts, if you will, that a lot of people are probably no longer paying attention to. And this one's even better, like you mentioned, Steve, because it's not showing up that much on the surface stats, but certainly looks to be on a great run right now, just in the past like week or so, a 966 OPS. So obviously you want the homers to come along, but he was a huge name at the start of the season, and obviously a disastrous initial run, but then when he got sent down, I know when he got called back up, we were looking at his name next to a bunch of others, and we kind of said this is just a wait and see, because there were so many reasons to gamble on other players who hadn't struggled. But yeah, all those reasons in the O swing there, it's a very good one. Mine is similar rostership with 15% rostered in Yahoo, which is really surprising, and it's Oscar Gonzalez, who's a name that we haven't talked about as much this season, Steve. I know he came up with, all of the power upside, and a lot of people were excited. But what's really interesting to me, I mean, for one, he's obviously white hot right now. Over the past week, he has three homers. He's not striking out very much, which is great. He has better plate discipline than you'd think for kind of a slugger of his level. But really, when I'm kind of looking at the splits on Gonzalez, who's batting cleanup for the Guardians, the most encouraging thing for me is that the fly ball rate has really skyrocketed since August, which is when he kind of turned it on. So the first half of the season, you know, there was a lot of, you know, buzz about Gonzalez amidst all of the Guardians and kind of their up and down process, but his home run to fly ball was only like 8%, which was always low. Now that's kind of corrected. I believe it's at like 15% in the second half. But on top of that, he's really gotten his fly ball rate up quite a bit. So I think if you're looking for some pop, this is a guy just age 24, big power pedigree, batting cleanup, and all the things kind of under the hood look like this homer surge is legit. I'm a fan. He doesn't walk much, but again, just like a 21% strikeout rate. So I think Oscar Gonzalez is another one. Unfortunately, you don't get the stats from the past 2 weeks where he's got like a 917 OPS, but I think that there's some interest here, and it might be another good name to circle going into next season, because his season line won't look that impressive with just like 8 home runs. But that's mine for the week. Not sure if you got anything to add there, Steve, or if we want to jump in.
Yeah, I'm with you on Oscar Gonzalez. I just wish I timed it a little better, or he timed it a little better for me. I added him the week of my home league playoff matchup on August 25th, and he went 1-for-12. So I think I missed like the coldest stretch in this last month for Gonzalez. But I added him for all the reasons you said. It, you know, it looks pretty good, and he took a walk a bit more in the minors, at least at Double A. There could be some potential there, but it's not like the strikeout rate's super, super high anyway. So I definitely like it and think it's a good call. And I'm interested in him beyond just this year as well, for all the reasons that you said.
Yep. Just to close the loop on that, because I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but first half fly ball rate was 24% next to a 55% ground ball rate. In the second half, dropped the ground balls from 55 down to 45%, and almost all that went to the fly ball rate, which is up from 24 to 34%. So very, very much the things you want to see there for him.
He had 31 homers across the minors in 2021. So definitely some sneaky pop there.
There we go. We're starting to get our sleepers down, Steve, for
I love it.
The future episodes.
I love it.
All right, so let's get into the accountability. I've kind of sorted this rundown, Steve, by date range, so we can look at this kind of in chronological order. But starting with back in March 17th, when we were all bright-eyed, bushy-tailed in draft season, looking at breakouts and busts. And I got to say, off the rip, Steve, I feel like our breakouts and busts were more successful in 21 than 22, definitely, which is maybe why we didn't win our leagues. But we still made the playoffs, so, you know, trying to save a little face here. However, we did have a few hits. Christian Javier was brought up. Carlos Rodon. I had a Trevor Story fade. If you recall, the way we did this breakouts and bust episode was basically who will be this year's blank. So we kind of looked at, you know, I think Carlos Rodon, for example, was who is this year's Julio Urias, who's got great stuff. We like the pitcher, but we're concerned about volume and who could take a step forward for volume. Rodon fit the bill, so on and so forth. So Christian Javier, Rodon, and Trevor Story were good calls in that department, but you and I had a lot of misses. This is where I want to just rifle through them because we got to own it, but then also talk about, like, is there any lesson learned here, or do we believe in the process that we had? So the misses, to rattle them off, hold your nose, Keston Hiura, Harrison Bader, Joe Adell, Ryan Mountcastle, Ryan McMahon, and then our fades, to pour salt in the wound, Randy Arozarena and Adolis Garcia. Steve, the floor is yours. What are your thoughts looking back on this episode? It's not to say that we were without reason, but it didn't work out for us.
So I think our process was poor on the way that we did this breakout and bust, right? Like, we tried to thread a needle with finding this year's X or finding this year's Y. That's not really how it works. Like, breakouts and busts are unique, and I don't think that's a good process. Sure, it's cool for, like, a tweet. Like, you know, I know Vlad Sedler does, you know, this year's Yelich and everything like that. But there's a lot more that goes into it than just finding a Christian Yelich, and I think it's more of just finding a breakout would rather, you know, be
their own story.
Yeah.
Their own
story. Doesn't have to be Christian Yelich. Like, you know, I think we tried too hard to match the player types, and it's hard enough to identify breakout and bust, let alone match them to a player type. So I don't think that we should do this style for breakout and busts. However, for the specific players that learn, I think, you know, the biggest for me are Rosarena and Adelise. Like, those player types scared us, the high K rate. But, like, we were also in on O'Neill. And, like, if you're like, okay, I'll take one of O'Neill, Rosarena, and Adelise, like, it's okay to take one of those player types. Just don't take all three, right? You have a 2-for-3 hit rate on those player types. I'm not saying that it's always, okay, those are going to be a 66% chance, whatever. But, you know, guys with flaws and guys that strike out a lot, don't get too trapped in that, right? Like, there's still a path for Adelise Garcia to be good, and same with Arozarena. Same with Tyler O'Neill for next year, right? Like,
yeah,
you can't just get too tied up in, you know, one part of a player's skill package, you know? While we've had all valid reasons, it's just, you know, it goes to show that still might not be the case, even if those flaws do hold true. Like, you know, Garcia's play discipline is a little bit improved, right? So that was a big step, and, like, you could have saw that in the beginning of the season and adjusted. And, you know, I know in a lot of my leagues he was added and free, not even drafted. So you could see that and sort of be willing to adjust.
Yeah, I think the other thing to note with Arozarena and Adelise especially is it goes back to that Eno Saris piece early on, where, or maybe it was a pod with DVR, they were talking about how, you know, you can kind of, I guess you can kind of make up for bad plate discipline if you have kind of the bat speed and the athleticism. And I know that these guys aren't like 22 years old, but when you think of a Rosarena, Adolis Garcia, these are guys who steal bases, they're athletic players, like, you know, maybe that high swing rate. You know, we talk about Fernando Tatis. We were all scared of his strikeout rate when he was, like, the second rounder, and then he turned into, you know, a top two player in the league. So I think that's just something that, like, the Luis Robert prototype, that I'm just not going to be as petrified just because they have, like, a high 20s or low 30s K rate, as long as I can kind of draft around that. I mean, I know I don't want to stack my team up with those guys, but I guess I feel better about, if there is going to be a high K rate, let's make it a guy that is an athletic type and not, you know, an aging first baseman who's, you know, got an inflated strikeout rate.
And cost is a factor, right? Like, Adelis was essentially free or late in deeper drafts.
Yeah.
Rosarena was scary because there was a high price tag on it. Same with O'Neill, right? Mm-hmm. And Rosarena, for a lot of the season, you know, he's a streaky player. There was a good point where he was not worth that draft pick. So, you know, in roto leagues, it's different because you don't care really when that production comes. Mm-hmm. But there's still an argument to be made that it wasn't as big of a miss as it appears now that he's, you know, been on fire for August. But, you know, it still comes into the fact that, you know, with costs, you know, maybe I won't invest in Adelis if he goes where Tyler O'Neill goes next year, just because that cost will be high. I'd rather go where, you know, I'd take a shot with O'Neill if he's in a 12th rounder or something like that, because it's a similar profile with the similar upside if the year goes right for him.
Yeah, well said. I think in hindsight, a big lesson learned is the O'Neill or Rosarena, it's kind of flip a coin, but with the draft day price for Adelis, that should have been the, you know, don't draft O'Neill or Rosarena, draft Adelis Garcia, because you can wait.
Take your shot on the athlete with the high K rate and steals homer potential much later, because it won't hurt you as much. Yep, that's awesome. That's a good lesson learned and takeaway.
And it goes with your kind of draft lesson learned from last episode, or just, you know, get your stability early on and take your shots later. So, okay, we got to move through a lot of these episodes. So our goal was not to redo the episode for 40 minutes apiece. Be a long show in mid-September, but the second show we wanted to look at was early buys and sells. This was April 14th show, so just 2-3 weeks into the season, but I believe we hit our sample size of like 50 balls in play. Is that right, Steve?
Close to it. I don't think that was exactly. I think we might have been halfway there. I'm just estimating it because I just ran a leaderboard from September 1st to September 14th, and most guys had like 30-ish balls in play, so I think we were halfway there. We looked more like some plate discipline, I think, for that episode, but still a pretty good list here.
Okay, because we were saying, I think some of it was using the data that stabilized the quickest. So we were looking at like max exit velo, plate discipline, but not quite like barrel rate or expected stats or anything.
Yeah, we had an eye on it, but didn't want to, like, you know, use it as gospel, essentially.
Yeah, but still very early in the season, so I think this is in that range where it's like these guys believing or not believing could have made a big difference in kind of your ability to pick guys up off the wire and everything like that. So for this one, I think we did a little better, Steve. Our buys at the time were Stephen Kwan. Now, he didn't end up being the MVP that we thought he was in the first 2 weeks, but in the full picture of the season, Kwan has put together a very nice year. We could talk about him more in depth in a second. Then we had Saya Suzuki, Connor Joe, and then sells, we had Giancarlo Stanton, who I liked going into the season, but we did not like that his strikeout rate had kind of regressed and he had lost some of the gains of the previous year. Same story for Jorge Soler and Bobby Dalbec and Joe Adell as well. The last thing I want to note on this show, I thought the pitch mix changers was a very solid list and might be worthy of a kind of set it in cement show topic next year, 3 or 4 weeks into the season, because this list here, Steve, was Kyle Wright, Justin Steele, Merrill Kelly, and Shane McClanahan. Now, granted, you know, you're not going to be able to go add a Shane McClanahan, but I think the story here was these guys made a tweak in just 2.5 weeks into the season. We saw reasons to believe, and they basically, all four of those guys turned around and had a very impressive season based on their expectations. So the floor is yours. Yeah, any of these buckets here that you want to hit on, We could spend a few minutes on the early buys and sells episode.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, sure, you weren't able to add McClanahan, but you could have said, hey, this is really good buy high. And if you bought him in April for full price, you got a full year of, you know, an ace essentially. So I think that's a really, really good call. And we definitely have to do that as a show next year, quickly into the season. That'll be a staple for sure. You know, Stephen Kwan, it kind of reassured what we knew. It was good plate discipline. And, you know, if you held through that sort of little adjustment period in May and June, you know, he kind of figured out a way to contribute in stolen bases as well, you know, giving you great average hits and runs. So it was reassuring to see that. You know, Suzuki was kind of injury, you know, cancels out with Stanton. That was a bit of an injury. Looks better because of that, because he missed so much time. But hey, if you see that high K rate with an injury prone player, you know, there is a lot more elevated risk with a guy like Stanton. So I think that's a great call. And, you know, the pitch mix changers are a really, really good idea. And we'll definitely look back at that. Two other things that I wanted to touch on real quickly from this episode. Nate Lowe stood out for my max exit velocity standouts. He had the highest max exit velocity standout at the time. I think it was 113 miles an hour. So that was impressive. I know he's always been a guy that hit the ball hard and just needed to get in the air a bit more. But that was encouraging and led to a good sign. And then we also highlighted some fastball velocity gainers, and guys like Luis Severino, who had a nice bounce back, Shohei Ohtani, who took a step from being like good, a really good pitcher to a Cy Young candidate. And then other guys like Carlos Rodon, who, you know, has been relatively healthy for all the concerns we had about him. Logan Gilbert, who's been pretty good all year. So some good process on this episode for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, Steve, because I got to do it. Stephen Kwan, I've talked to you about how he's kind of tailor-made for my home league settings with like the plate discipline, and we have walks, we dock for strikeouts, we have like singles, doubles, triples as categories. I have the ability to keep Stephen Kwan in the sixth round of a 14 team. So it's pricey, but you won't believe his season rank with those league settings, 28th overall.
Yeah, so then you got to keep him. I mean, in standard leagues, he's, you know, probably, you know, low 100s, right? Like,
yeah,
he's got 15 steals, a 293 average with 72 runs. It's
More walks than strikeouts, which that's a list of maybe five players in the league, if that. Quickly had to hit on that. But you said it, yeah, the fastball velocity. I think we just need the pitchers episode, like that two for or three sure. weeks in next year.
And like that stuff that we know, right? Like you're able to tell with pitchers quicker because you get so much more of a sample, right? So
yeah,
stick with what works.
Absolutely. Moving forward a little bit, we're now on June 30th. Episode 62. This was second half bounce backs, and this one was a little bit more spin the wheel, Steve, and we were just kind of grabbing guys that more or less, in my opinion, were name brands that were underperforming. Mm-hmm. Some of them had underlying metrics that gave us some reason to believe, but I don't think any of them were like scream off the mountaintop, like everything points that this guy is going to break out. Maybe with one or two exceptions. So for this show, all of the names we mentioned were bounce backs that we were predicting. Some of them somewhat worked out. Max Muncy, you know, I almost had to look and gut check these, but Muncy's OPS first half to second half went from 639 to 860. So we started to figure it out there. Jonathan India, you wouldn't really like put it as a headline, but he went from a 636 OPS to an 812. I know that was kind of a small sample size at the time on the pre-All-Star break. Castellanos, I know, man, he's been like one of the misses of the whole season. We both liked him going into the year. His OPS did go from 673 to 773, but no homers to go with it. And then the misses that really stood out were Juan Soto, which we probably don't even need to talk about. That seems like an anomaly and crazy, but we all know that his OPS, for what it's worth, dropped from 931 to 738. in the second half. And then
crazy.
Yeah, and then the real big misses were Joey Votto, Nelson Cruz, and then Trevor Rogers and Lucas Giolito, whose name will come up several times in this episode. But the question for Votto and Cruz is just put bluntly, like, is this the end of the road for those guys? And then beyond that, curious on your thoughts on this episode, Steve. Any lessons learned or anything you want to probe on?
I think we were better at this last year, too. Another thing that we weren't great at identifying. Definitely for me, Soto, I put my chips all in on him in my, around my league's trade deadline. Traded Manny Machado for him. Thought it was a good idea. But that's why I'm sitting home golfing, figuratively, not literally, with a newborn. So
you're right, though. There was Goldschmidt last year. Like, I remember there were some massive breakouts.
We nailed last year. We nailed it last year, yeah. But Soto, Jay Jaff over at Fangraphs wrote an article today about how Soto's not having a Juan Soto-type year. I did not read it yet. Look at me being a horrible host, but I will plan on reading it. You should definitely read it. He does great work over there at Fangraphs, Jay Jaff, so looking forward to reading that and wondering if there's just, you know, some sort of injury going on, new adjustment to, you know, San Diego. You know, we see that these things take time, sometimes take a year, like we saw with Goldschmidt, Arenado, Lindor, for guys at new places. So I'm going to be all over Soto if he falls to like the mid or back end of the first round next year. For Votto and Cruz, yeah, it might be. He's so old that it might be over. But for Votto, like, you know, he tweeted out like right before he announced that he needed shoulder surgery, and his Twitter is great. He was like, "I didn't know I was hurt. I thought I just stunk." So maybe that injury played into it all year and led to that. So I would never count out Joey Votto, even after he burned me. Essentially, has had like the most shares of him I've ever had this year. Trevor Rogers, it looks like he's actually healthy. He had a back injury all year this year. Said he's felt the best that he has all season. And since he's come back from the IL, he's looked like the Trevor Rogers of last year. So another guy that I'm going to be all in on next year. Looks like he was hurt. Giolito, shrug emoji. I have no idea. I don't get it with Giolito. You know, I would need to do a deep, deep dive onto what's going on with Giolito.
Yeah.
I do not get why he's this bad.
Yeah, well said all around. And Rogers, we were swirling around that as a topic for 3 or 4 weeks in a row this season. And it just felt like the one that was going to bounce back. And we were watching starts. And it makes me feel way better that, like you said, he's kind of putting it all together in the past month with, or I guess the past three starts, 18 in the third with a 2.95 ERA, 0.93 WHIP. So that's a really good one that's flying under the radar. I'm sure there will be some buzz, and that'll be something to watch in the offseason. But I was curious on Soto. So you're thinking mid to back part of the first round. I would take the over on pick 8 in
really.
I'm just saying in terms of his ADP. I think people are...
Yeah, no, you think that that's where how far he's going to fall?
Yes.
Think people are that burn that bad?
I think he's going to go back in that like Bryce Harper territory, but maybe not. It's just on the 237 average. He doesn't have a lot of speed to go with it. I'm where you're at, which I would probably pick him around, you know, the 5 to 7 range, and just
kind of... Yeah, so hope you have the 8th pick and he falls, yeah.
Yeah, but that's a really interesting one. So we got two more shows that were jam-packed with hits and misses we will get to in a second, but first we're going to take a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, so Steve, the timeline shifts forward a couple weeks. It is now July 7th.
Yeah, we need like a fast forward sound effect in here, you know, like as we go from July.
Yeah, I love it. This is the July 7th, and this is one of my favorite ones, Steve. We talked about basically looking at quarters of the season. So we were almost at the halfway point, and we said, let's look at the first quarter of the season versus the second quarter. And you ran a really nice spreadsheet that showed K-minus BB improvers from first quarter to second quarter for pitchers, and then barrel rate improvers from first quarter to second quarter. And for this, we did both the guys who it looks good, like the arrow was going the right way, mm-hmm. and then the guys that it looked bad. So of all the shows we did, when I looked at this one, I was like, oh, man, this kind of had the crystal ball working. So to kind of rattle through them, Charlie Morton was a smashing success. He was near the top of that list. Pre-All-Star break, a 4.45 ERA. Post-All-Star break, a 3.68 ERA. The K rate got even better for Morton. I know that would have been kind of almost a buy high at that time because he was starting to figure it out anyway, but it still looked even better the rest of the way. Jose Quintana, I remember at the time, he was not a Cardinal, so I was not biased on that, but you were loving him, Steve, and his numbers, they followed suit with the chart here. Pre-All-Star break, a 3.99 ERA. Post-All-Star break, a 2.22, and the whip improved as well. Ironically, the K rate went down a little bit, but you'll take it with those ratios. And then on the flip side, on the pitching, we had reasons for concern at, you know, kind of the midway point of the season for Eric Lauer, who we all know kind of, you know, turned back into a pumpkin. Tarik Skubal, who we liked at first, but then we were like, man, now it's starting to look like it's going the other way. And Lucas Giolito. So those three fades you probably could have sold on a trade and been very thankful that you did. That said, we got to own that another fade on that list, who was kind of regressing from the first quarter to second quarter, was Zach Gallen, and he was lights out the rest of the way. So let's start with pitchers, Steve, because there's a lot in there. Just thoughts on that metric in general and how you felt about some of these guys and the show topic.
Yeah, I think this is another one that we definitely have to bookmark and do as a topic. There was a lot of good process and good results that came of it. You know, Gallen's a bit unfair. He made a pretty drastic pitch mix change in the beginning of August, like kind of after the All-Star break, and took off from there. He really started to up the use in his curveball at the expense of his cutter and changeup, which, you know, they're still two good pitches, but that clearly unlocked something for him. He might just be able to command the curveball and mm-hmm. get a ton more whiffs. But, you know, we've always loved Gallen, and I think, you know, I don't think we were, you know, screaming panic sell on him like we were on a few other guys.
No, I was actually listening to it. We were saying Giolito and Gallen, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So kind of okay. Both of them, so, there.
Yeah.
And then we were saying Skubal, Lauer, some of the earlier guys we were more concerned with. But yeah, I hear you.
It's fair. So, but still, I think it led to, I think this is a good process. Like, right, like you could have had Quintana for free and added him before the mad rush when he became a Cardinal, and even that few starts runs before he was traded. Morton was just, you know, clearly a great buy low and revalidated that. So, I think we definitely have to do this next year again at the halfway point and sort of look at it in quarters.
The quarter by quarter was great. And then mm-hmm. On the hitter side, we had some successes as well with looking at the barrel rate improvements. And we only did a few of these ones because we ran long on the pitchers. But Francisco Lindor, who first half had a 756 OPS, second half an 858. The homer total has gone down a little bit, but still you'll kind of take the climb there. And then Nathaniel Lowe, another one, Steve, that we're kind of talking about throughout the season along with the rest of the industry. But man, did he put it all together with the first half, a 752 OPS, second half, 1035. And Lowe, I wanted to call out just the season line, batting 307, 24 homers. The counting stats look good for where we're at in the season. We'll probably end up with, you know, something close to 150 runs plus RBIs. It's going to be interesting to see where Lowe lands, but I think for a player like that, Lindor, you know, would have been a trade target. But these barrel risers, really the one that we missed was Jesse Winker, but Lindor and Lowe both were really astute at that point where you could have, you know, did the buy low or obviously go out and add Nathaniel Lowe. He was on the wire for a lot of leagues, but more good stuff there for the hitters. Anything to add on those guys or anything in general, Steve?
No, I know Lowe got hot a little bit before that and was probably added in most leagues, but if he wasn't, it was, you know, it's really encouraging that these two guys showed up. You know, Lindor has been, you know, kind of like what Lindor was before 2021 and 2020 in the second half. So good stuff there, and I definitely think we should look at it again next season for hitters too.
Yeah, it's a I liked how you talked about just the simplicity of these metrics, but next year it's going to be, you know, we'll go straight to this because I think,
and like maybe we can do it even like a little earlier, right? So we could see Lowe, you know, maybe we can do it, I don't know, in
yeah, not wait till July. 50.
Yeah, because like, you know, there could have been some.
Maybe some April to May?
Exactly, yeah, like April to May rise or something like that. Or, you know, we could see like when they hit like 100, when people are hitting like 100 balls in play, so that we have like a sample of 50 and 50, like, you know, stabilization rates for both periods, something like that. So we can identify Lowe maybe a little bit earlier because he was probably scooped up towards the end of June in most leagues. But if you did, he got essentially a first round first baseman, right? Like, Jesus, Lowe has had such a good year.
And it seemed like his hitter profile, we were talking about it, because for a while it was all contact, almost like the Eric Hosmer thing. And then he really found the power to where, yeah, I mean, he's been on a tear, 8 homers in his last month. But, yeah, it seems like he has been several different hitters, and now he's putting them all together. So very interesting to see what's going to happen with Nathaniel Lowe. And yeah, maybe we can pair it with like, it'd be a good thing for like trade targets as well, if we want to do like a,
definitely,
you know, look at it with the trade lens too. So love that. And then kind of the Van Burnett special here, always looking at the second half schedules, and most importantly for pitchers to see if you've got a starting pitcher on the wire or on your team that's lined up for the Pirates, the Tigers, etc. And this one we did on July 21st, so it was kind of looking ahead to August and September, but we looked at strength of schedules for both hitters and pitchers. We didn't love the pitcher teams from like a waiver standpoint. I believe like the Rangers were on there. And then there were the White Sox, which, you know, most of those starting pitchers were already rostered. But I guess if you were to try to make sense of the pitchers, Jordan Montgomery, we really outlined that the Cardinals and the White Sox had two of the best schedules across both sides of the baseball. And when you look at what Montgomery did when he moved to the Cardinals, some of that would, of course, be the devil magic, but otherwise, the schedule certainly played in his favor. He's had a low twos ERA after he was kind of wobbling with the Yankees before that. And then Dylan Cease was lights out in the second half, but he's kind of been lights out the whole season. On the other White Sox, Kopech and Giolito have not really capitalized on the soft schedule the way you would have hoped for. But I think there's more to be excited about with the hitters, Steve, where
definitely
we talked about Eloy Jimenez, Luis Ranjifo was a name that I feel like the first time we mentioned it, we were kind of laughing about, like, let's make sure we get this pronunciation right, and this guy's 1% rostered. And he turned it on in the second half with a 283 average and a 762 OPS, mixing in a little power speed there. And then Tyler O'Neill, it's kind of a tricky one. I know he's been the headache of the season for you, but if you want to look at the numbers pre-All-Star break, a 650 OPS, and post-All-Star break, the average went down, but the power kind of came around, and the OPS was at 759 thanks to 10 homers compared to 4 in the first half. So overall, the second half schedules, it's an interesting topic because I feel like there are still pitchers that randomly get roughed up by, like, the Chicago Cubs. You know, so I really want to give this one the stress test, but I feel like it still has its merit, you know, certainly from just, like, a common sense standpoint. But then it looks like we've at least uncovered a few things that led to breakouts. But what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, maybe for pitchers it needs to be more of, like, guys to stream, right? Like, we don't even need to mention specific guys, but, like, okay, hey, when they're facing these teams, you know, you could stream, you know, J.P. Sears against the Angels, right? Because we identified the Angels as a really bad team or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, for Giolito and Kopech, like, Kopech was – velocity was fluctuating all year, battled some injuries. Giolito just didn't seem right. Like, the fact that he's facing the A's isn't going to fix Giolito, even though it's a great matchup, right? He's just going wrong. It's – probably will still go wrong, maybe just a little less wrong versus the A's, right?
Yeah.
Maybe we need to tweak the process on that there, and not use it as, like, a buy low sort of mechanism. But, you know, for hitters, I think that might be a different story, right? Like, Ranjifo had a great schedule, not the greatest hitter, but, you know, cashed in with 11 homers, 6 steals so far this year, and has really made the most of that playing time, and a soft schedule like that could be good. Eloy, I think, was a great call. I think it's just a matter of him getting healthy and, you know, facing these rough teams. You know, we saw that the White Sox had this great schedule, and they've really been taking advantage of it too. Mm-hmm. Eloy, you could have bought low on, and I think we were really stressing that you should buy low on him. He was still close to that, right? The All-Star break was late this year, so we did this episode, like, right out of the All-Star break. So he's sitting under 200 at the time of this episode. The rest of the way, he's got, you know, Mike Trout numbers, 1033 OPS and 11 homers. So if you did that, that's a absolute great move.
While we're on, just because we got some time, yep. Steve, while we're on Eloy, you know, people will look at this and see, I don't have it in front of me, but he's got to have, what, maybe like 14, 15 homers on the season. Let's see. It's, 13 home runs on the season. What range of the draft do you think with this second half and his name value, but also some people have been burned at this point? Do you think he's like 80s, 90s territory, even farther back than that?
I mean, where was he this year? He was,
I think, probably 65?
What, 50, 60, and then, like, the year before that, he peaked at, like, the 30s. Mm-hmm. That's kind of why we liked him. We're like, look at how much we liked him just a year ago, right? And if he's anywhere lower than he is this year, I'm going to absolutely love it. I think he should be. I think you're right. Maybe it'll be from pick 80 to 100. But I am going to love Eloy Jimenez at that price next year. Just, you know, when he's healthy, this guy mashes. I know when he's healthy, it's been risky with that, but one of those injuries was that freak injury in spring training. You know, this year there's been a bunch of different issues, but, you know, when he's going good, he's one of the best hitters in the league. So I'll love him at that discount and be trying to get as many shares as I can.
Yeah, 5x5. He's the number one player in fantasy baseball over the last week, number 24 over the past month. So that'll be a name to circle and see if you can get a discount on Eloy for buying. Now, granted, it has been against some lighter matchups, but still, the AL Central in general, yeah, you're going to get that.
The overall line, you know, right now it's looking good, so maybe that discount won't be as steep as we're hoping. It's a 317, 382, 522 slash with a 904 OPS. I know the volume's not there, but those rate stats are going to pop off the page.
Yeah, it's a good point because I guess he really didn't have much time early on before the All-Star break. So, yeah.
It wasn't weighted well, yeah.
And then people were just getting impatient. I do remember this year he got his roster ship got all the way down to like 86%. Like he was being dropped. I added him as a waiver claim. I was the only claim in my home league out of 14 teams. So it was crazy that it happened like that. But sometimes, you know, people get impatient and they freak out.
The underlines look as good as it did in 2020. So like a 55.5% hard hit rate, 113 max EV.
He'll be in the 60s then. Probably.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 I don't think there's going to be as big of a discount. And the K rate and walk rates are the best it's been. So hopefully people weren't paying attention, but I doubt it. So even at 50s or 60s, I think I like it just because the only thing that's been holding this guy back is the health, and it's not like, you know, I don't think he's in Giancarlo Stanton's soft tissue injury territory just yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the other ones, I'm just trying to look through some of the other ones we had outlined, but like I remember Taylor Ward was a name we were throwing out along with Renhifo. He was out for a while and banged up. It looks like he's kind of been a little ho-hum. You know, it's like 250. He's kind of warming up a little bit, but yeah, regardless, I think this is a worthwhile exercise. We'll probably keep the show next year, but maybe just tweak it like you're saying and focus more on hitters to target and maybe just almost do like a offenses to stream against and maybe outline some pitchers over the next like couple weeks rather than looking at like a rest of season. But that's one that we'll have to evaluate and keep it going. So across all of these, Steve, you know, any closing thoughts about some of these topics? I mean, I think those are good lessons learned with the breakouts and busts. Let's not try to fit it into an already complicated scenario and make it even more complicated. Early buys and sells, we kind of liked what we were doing there, but especially looking at pitch mix changers and pitchers with velocity changes. Second half bounce backs, maybe we got to look if there's any really jumping out this year. I think we were kind of squinting at a lot of these and looking at the name value. And then I think one of our favorites is that K minus BB and barrel improvers quarter by quarter or month by month. But this is fun looking back on these, man. I enjoy this.
Yeah, and I think the overall lesson and something that I always try to focus on it and preached and think it's a good way to be good at this. Whenever there's a change, like, look for a reason behind that change. Like, I think then our most successful shows were where that was the process, where we looked at a K minus BB change, where we looked at a pitch mix change, where we looked at a barrel rate change. So I think for our process this off season and for looking for breakouts, like, look for reasons why guys improved. Like, look for, okay, Eloy got healthy, this is what happened, you know. Things that lead to, you know, the surface sat changes. Like, sure, you could see a hot month for a player, but like, look to see what caused that and try to find the underlying stats. And I think that's our roots. That's the roots of the show. And I think that's the best process. And going through all these and having this accountability and sort of recapping what worked and what didn't, I think that's what worked. Like, try to find a cause for what your eyes and what the numbers are telling you. And go with that. You're going to find Charlie Morton, Eloy Jimenez in the second half if you do that.
Yeah, it's a really good one. And I think, we can keep throughout the offseason, we'll continue to kind of keep line of sight to what's worked in the past season. I know we like in the offseason to get into some of the advanced metrics and like even like the vertical attack angle, things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll just continue to focus on improvement. That's what we do. So
yeah, the year-to-year totally leaderboard changer is going to be our friend over at Fangraphs this offseason. I'm going to be on that page a bunch.
Yeah, so programming note, Steve, I know we're talking about maybe September to remember. We got the chalkboard in there, but we're probably just a couple weeks out from the episodes getting spaced out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then we can probably get into the, top pitchers, hitters going into next year, surprise ADP rankings, some things like that. And then before you know it, we might even be into some early mocks for next year. I think last year they hit as quickly as like late October, if I remember.
Yeah, yeah. I think we'll have, what, two more regular seasons episodes. Then we'll start spacing it out. I know we'll keep you guys posted on the schedule and everything like that. But yeah, excited for it. Excited to still give some advice, like we said. I think it's cool that we're trying to look for a player each week, and we'll do that going forward. We'll look back and see how Torkelson and Oscar Gonzalez did this next week, and let's sort of grade ourselves there and keep that going. But yeah, excited for it, man. I hope we do that staff mock draft again. That's a great way to kick off the offseason.
Yeah, that'd be another fun one to look back on. We'll have to do that as like a mini segment.
I think my team was great, dude.
My team had Nestor Cortez in the 21st round.
Otani was my first pitcher. Nick reamed me on he's going to win the Cy Young.
For all our losses, we have to go back to that and be like, man, Nick talked us off the ledge on a flyer on Cortez.
I think my best team was the mock draft that didn't do anything, in October.
Spot on. Although I think I had Castellanos, so I'll have to eat crow on that one. But I love it, man. All right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in. Please throw us a rating, review on Spotify, Apple, wherever you guys listen. But thanks so much for tuning in this time of the year. Our Twitter is at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_Verified. And Steve is at Stav8818. It's Wins Above Fantasy, episode 73, the accountability episode. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for talking baseball, guys. Later.